Court will proceed to the fourth case, the United States versus Kincannon.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Kringle. Was it Kriegel?
Kriegel.
Kriegel. All right.
May it please the Court. My name is Jason Kriegel, and I represent Appellant James Kincannon. I would like to, if I may, spend my short amount of time this morning discussing the conspiracy issue, and then to the extent the Court has questions, I'm also happy to discuss the other two issues in my brief. The most important thing that I can do this morning is to ask the Court to take a close look at this Court's recent decision in United States versus Cologne, which we cited in our 28J letter and in our reply brief. That Cologne is critical to this case for two reasons. First, it really clarifies the law with regards to how to differentiate between a conspiracy on the one hand and a buyer-seller relationship where the buyer intends to resell the drugs.
And if the evidence here is that he would go to her, is it Dill, is that her name?
Yes, Cheryl Dill.
Go to her house and would buy drugs and had somebody outside that he told her some of the drugs were for that person, some were for me, and he'd pay out of one pocket on it. Isn't that enough for a conspiracy? And isn't that more than a buyer-seller?
No, Your Honor. I don't believe that that distinguishes this case from any case where the seller of the drugs is has knowledge that the buyer intends to resell. That was the case in Cologne, and the Court has said repeatedly that knowledge is not enough. In this case, the fact that Scott Thorberg, Kincannon's friend and customer, had accompanied him to Cheryl Dill's home could certainly be consistent with either an agreement between the two of them or with just a buyer-seller relationship between Dill and Kincannon and a buyer-seller relationship between Kincannon and Thorberg. And what Cologne says about how to look at that kind of evidence is that you can't look at an isolation at one piece of evidence that could go either way and say, you know, could this fit the government's theory of the case? You have to look at the evidence in context, and this Court has laid out a series of factors, mutual trust, the length of the transaction, whether there were credit sales, whether the transactions were standardized, and say, do all of these pieces of evidence together point in the direction of a buyer-seller relationship or a conspiracy? And the other reason that Cologne is such an important case here is because the facts of this case are virtually identical to those in Cologne. You had, in both cases, a buyer-seller relationship with a series of transactions over a period of about 6 weeks. You had the buyer aware that the seller was planning to resell, or the seller was aware that the buyer would resell the drugs, and so, in a sense, had a stake in whether he continued to sell. In both cases, there was, to a limited extent, standardization and mutual trust because the transactions were arranged over the phone. But in both cases, the coordination was minimal in that you didn't have the seller extending credit. You didn't have any coordination with regards to how the drugs would be distributed after the transactions took place. You didn't have the seller giving any details to the buyer about where the drugs were coming from or what the nature of the seller's conspiracy was. And so the government's brief basically acknowledges that in order to prevail, they would have to distinguish Cologne from this case, and they do point to the fact, Judge Evans, that you mentioned about Thorberg being present. But the essence of a conspiracy is an agreement between two people. And in this case, the government had to show that Kincannon and Dill would have agreed to commit some crime other than the transaction. So they can't just show that Kincannon brought the customer. They have to show that Dill and Kincannon agreed that he would go get customers. And the evidence here shows actually just the opposite. Dill told Kincannon not to bring customers to her home. And Thorberg and Kincannon had a relationship that went back, I think it was about a year. And so it wasn't really a new customer. Kincannon had been supplying drugs to Thorberg and since about September of the previous year, and Dill and Kincannon met in January. If Dill hadn't supplied the drugs to Kincannon, he probably would have gotten them somewhere else. What's remarkable about the government's evidence in this case is that they had on the stand Kincannon's alleged co-conspirator, Cheryl Dill, and she was testifying as a cooperating witness. And the government asked, what exactly was the agreement between you and Mr. Kincannon? And she could have said, well, the agreement was he would go find me customers and bring them to my house, but that's not what her answer was. She said, the agreement, our arrangement was that I offered to sell him drugs at $1,800 an ounce, and if he wanted to buy them, that was fine with me. So the government didn't have to present that direct evidence of conspiracy. But here, when you step back and look at all of the evidence in context, and think about the four factors which this court has emphasized are the most important in distinguishing between a conspiracy and a buyer-seller relationship, they all point away from conspiracy in this case. The length of the interaction was only about 6 weeks. There were no credit transactions, which is a factor that's been important in almost all of the cases where conspiracy convictions have been affirmed. There was mutual trust and standardization of the transactions only in the limited sense that those factors existed in Cologne and in any buyer-seller relationship where you know that that your customer is going to be reselling the drugs. It's also important to remember that the rationale for conspiracy liability is that there's some added danger when the buyer and the seller are agreeing to commit additional crimes. And so here, there's no benefit that either Kincannon or Dill is receiving from this transaction other than the fact that one's receiving drugs and one is receiving money. If this would be a very different case if Dill were fronting the drugs and then she was a lot more reliant upon whether Kincannon could be successful in his resale activities. Here, this was obviously only a few weeks' time, and she had at least one other customer. We know from the testimony of Scott Thorberg that Kincannon had other suppliers. So if the transaction hadn't worked out one day, they could have easily found other partners for the drug transactions. There was nothing specifically about their relationship that was a benefit to them that required that relationship continue. There's one other similarity between this case and Cologne that bears mentioning, and that's that it was the same jury instruction that was given in this case as in Cologne, which the court described as inadequate and confusing. And the real problem with the instruction is that the factors that are listed, large quantities, standardization, credit relationship, these can all be aspects of either a conspiracy or a buyer-seller relationship, with the exception of the credit sales. But here there were no credit sales, just as in Cologne. And the judge offered no explanation of how to apply those factors. And I see the light's on, so...
I'll save a moment or two for rebuttal.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Garrison.
Members of the court, Mr. Kriegel, may it please the court. My name is Bob Garrison. I'm a federal prosecutor from the Southern District of Illinois, and I prosecuted this same case, which is now before the court, at the district court level. Like my colleague, Mr. Kriegel, I'm going to confine my comments to the conspiracy issue unless I receive questions from the court about the other two issues that have been raised. I must make this observation to begin with, that in the description of the facts in this case, which Mr. Kriegel just recited a moment ago, I cannot recognize my own case. This is very fact-driven, and I would submit that the factors that point to conspiracy in this case, Mr. Kriegel simply glossed over or didn't mention at all. What I take from the Cologne opinion, decided last December, and I noticed when I came to court this morning that the court had not yet cited Cologne, so it hasn't been construed in any opinion following the Cologne decision's announcement. But what I take from Cologne is that the court is now focusing its attention more on whether or not there's a mutual benefit among the conspirators, some benefit received from acting in concert, that is to be the new focus of the court's interest, and also whether the fact that the conspirators are acting in concert presents some additional danger to society. So let me explain what I think the facts are in this case and how they apply under that analysis. Mr. Kriegel didn't mention that at trial, Ms. Dill, that was the seller, said, I sold dope only 15 times in total. And on 6 to 8 of those occasions, as many as half of them, Scott Thorberg drove Kincannon over to Dill's house. So on half of all the times Dill sold dope, Kincannon and Thorberg arrived together. In addition, Thorberg testified, I knew Miss Dill's name. I knew who was supplying her, contrary to what Mr. Kriegel just said. Thorberg testified, I knew she was getting her dope from some jockey who works at the racetracks in Kansas City. He said, I knew her name was Sherry Dill. I knew who her supplier was, and I drove him over there 8 times. And every time I drove him over there, I waited outside while the defendant, appellant Kincannon, went inside and got dope. Then he would always come back to my truck. He would give me the dope that I had ordered. Now, I want to apply the Cologne factors to the facts in this case. I believe that it is clear from the facts that each of these three conspirators, Kincannon, the defendant appellant, Dill, the supplier, and Thorberg, they all got something out of it. And I'd like to run through that. What does Ms. Dill get? Well, first of all, she's selling 2 times as much dope as she would have if Thorberg hadn't come over with Kincannon, twice as much. And that also speaks to the additional danger to society. Because Kincannon has recruited Thorberg and is riding over with him, she's selling twice as much dope and making twice as much money. That's what Ms. Dill gets out of it. What does Kincannon get out of it? And I suggest to the court that this may be the key to understanding this. Kincannon, on at least 6 to 8 occasions when he goes to Ms. Dill's house, 6 to 8 out of a total of 15, he rides over in Thorberg's tow truck, not in his own vehicle. Now, why is that a benefit to Kincannon? The answer is obvious, that if there is police surveillance, they're not going to see Kincannon's car, they're going to see Thorberg's. If there's a police stop after these dope transactions, they're not going to find the dope in Kincannon's vehicle, they're going to find it in Thorberg's. And this, members of the court, is not a mere academic point, because the police testified at the trial, and it's in the record, that they surveyed the two men in the tow truck over at Dill's house. The license plate they got was whose? It was Thorberg's. So what did Kincannon get out of this arrangement? He got the additional protection that it was not his vehicle seen parked in front of Miss Dill's house. That was what Kincannon got out of it. And as for Thorberg, Miss Dill constructed a kind of flimsy Chinese curtain to protect herself. Even though Thorberg and his tow truck were over there 8 times, Ms. Dill said, "I'm only going to deal with Jamie Kincannon." Now, I know the man out in the tow truck is his customer. I know that he's buying dope from him repeatedly, 6 to 8 times, but I've never met him. He waits outside, and I only deal with Jamie. So what I want to say in conclusion, and that's exalting form over substance. I mean, she knows that Kincannon's bringing her a new dope customer, and that's the only reason they're there. Not 1 time, not 2 times, not 3 times, not 4 times, not 5 times, 6, 7, 8 times. She knows why they're coming over there. But she's got this little thin Chinese veil to say, well, I never actually dealt face-to-face with Thorberg, and therefore that's not a conspiracy.
I thought it was the Chinese wall. I didn't know they had veils.
I beg your pardon, Honor Judge Bauer?
I thought it was a Chinese wall. I wasn't sure.
Well, I yield to you on the Chinese law question, sir.
You diminished it to a small veil.
It
doesn't have to be Chinese. It could just be a veil.
All right. It could be any sort of veil, but it's a pretextual veil. And Ms. Dill's pretextual veil, where she has willful blindness, she turns willful blindness here to protect herself, I would suggest to the court in conclusion that if you adopt Mr. Kriegel's analysis, you are, in effect, exalting this pretextual veil Ms. Dill tried to set up here as being a blueprint on how you can avoid cologne. That even though you're getting mutual benefits out of this, all three of you, and even though there's an increased danger to society because you're selling twice as much dope, as long as we have this thin pretextual veil, where there's no actual face-to-face meeting, then there's no conspiracy. And I would suggest that that is a construction or a refinement of cologne that I would hope this court would not be willing to write into law. I'm going to quit now unless there are any further questions from the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Garrison. Mr. Kriegel?
Thank you. Just a couple quick points. The first is that the fact that Cheryl Dill didn't wish to deal with Mr. Kincannon's customers, I don't think can be described as a veil. The evidence was that she didn't want involvement beyond just the transaction between her and Kincannon. She didn't know who Scott Thorberg was. She knew there was somebody waiting in the car. But this was just a buyer-seller relationship between her and Kincannon.
What would you get out of this if this is only affects the verdict on the conspiracy count, not on the distribution of meth count?
That's right.
The jury found him guilty on that count. Now, I know in maybe some relevant conduct you got a little more meth involved to raise the guideline level, but no matter what happens on the conspiracy count, the conviction on count 3 here would not be disturbed.
It actually was very significant here because the government charged under 841B1A, and so it had to show the 500 grams of meth. And it got that by using some of the drugs that were on Dill's bed that she had not sold to Kincannon. And then that gave Kincannon a mandatory minimum of 20 years, which he wouldn't have had on the distribution charge.
We got more than 20 years.
Got 30 years, but the judge made quite a point of saying, and in fact, Mr. Kincannon's trial counsel at sentencing said, it's academic what sentence you give him, because he's going to jail for 20 years. His life expectancy is probably only another 10 years. And
well, don't say that because he's as old as
Judge. No offense.
I'm a young judge on this. I know the defendant here is 75. He's a lot closer to Baum and Bauer than me.
Statistically, then I'd be dead for the last seven.
Well, and I'd also just like to point out that in Cologne, the sentencing calculations wouldn't have been changed at all. Here, the guideline calculation would be different, and the mandatory minimum would be gone. And in Cologne, still, it was worth reversing so the judge could reconsider. And I see that I'm out of time, so if there's no more questions, I thank the court.
All right, thanks to all counsel. And an additional thanks, Mr. Kriegel, to you, Mr. Huber, and the clinic for accepting the appointment and ably representing Mr. Kincaid. Case is taken under